Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What item gets replaced every year in virtually every American home and office and also doubles as a makeshift booster seat and paper source for ticker tape parades? The strange but true answer, of course, is the phone book, a resource we often consult, or at least we did before the internet was everywhere, but rarely stop to think about. Writer Ammon Shea wondered how such a ubiquitous item has managed to be so taken for granted and decided to investigate its origins for himself. He shares his findings in the new book, The Phone Book, the curious history of the book that everyone uses but no one reads. Ammon, welcome back to Think.
Great. Thank you for having me.
As you started your research on this, you discovered that even academics have pretty much completely ignored the phone book.
Yeah, it's really been, an oddly overlooked item, considering how many people have been in some way touched by the phone book and how much influence it's had in almost everybody's life in the 20th century. I really think it's remarkable that nobody has paid that much attention to it, even academics who, as you point out, academics usually look into everything, I had this idea that there must have been some struggling graduate student who was casting about for something to write his dissertation on that nobody had touched, and somebody must have grabbed the telephone book, but it seems to not be the case.
It reminded me of, in college when I had my first apartment and my name was listed in the phone book for the first time, and suddenly I felt like a grown-up.
Right, well, there's that great scene in that movie from 1979, the Steve Martin movie, The Jerk, when his character, Navin Johnson, is, and he gets a job at the gas station, and suddenly he gets the new telephone book, and he's just overwhelmed with joy. He's running around shouting, the new telephone book's here, the new phone book's here. I've arrived, my name's in print, which unfortunately is just before the serial killer is going through the telephone book and finds the name, Navin Johnson, and decides to shoot him with an assault rifle. But for a lot of people, I think it did have had some meaning there, if you're in that book, that you have a kind of adulthood then.
City directories existed before phones actually did. How were they used back then?
Well, it depended, but basically directories were pretty much exactly what they sound like. It was a means of finding people in a city. The first directory was back in before it was even America. It was in New Amsterdam in, I think, 1665. And then there was a break in directories for 100-and-something years, and then they started coming up again. But directories are more or less listings of all the citizens, and at least at first they were the listings of all the prominent citizens. And they would they certainly didn't give telephone numbers because there were no telephones, so they would typically list the name of the person, usually all men, at least at first, and where they lived, and in many cases, what they did. In some cases, the early ones, they were terribly incomplete. They would just say, Ed Peterson, carpenter, and that was it. And they didn't say anything else about them. But as time went on and the phone book became more and more ubiquitous and started having all this information like, addresses, and in some cases, the phone books would list occupations, the directories became largely, superfluous and are even more obsolete than the telephone book now.
So the very first telephone directory was published in 1878 in New Haven, but it didn't actually contain any numbers. It just told people who actually had phones.
Right. It just had 50 names, most of which were for businesses. There was no real need for telephone numbers at first because you would just call up in the operator and say, I want to speak to Dan Smith, and Dan Smith would then be connected to you via the operator. They didn't have telephone numbers for the first few years of the telephone, and it wasn't until, I think it was about 1880, there was a measles outbreak in Lowell, Massachusetts, and suddenly somebody realized, if the operators are all sick with the measles, we have no way of getting in touch with nobody knows the telephone numbers. Nobody knows how to get through. And so they came up with this idea of, we'll just come up with telephone numbers. And at first, one of my favorite little bits of telephone trivia was that there was a real sense of a real opposition to this. A number of people were saying things like, that's absurd. Nobody will submit to such a dehumanizing experience as having a number attached to their name. People are going to give up their telephones rather than submit to this. But they did it anyway, and people almost immediately became really attached to their telephone numbers, so much so that, the first telephones, when they had numbers, they were 4 digits or sometimes 5 digits because there weren't that many of them. And so they obviously had to then reassign telephone numbers as they became more and more, as they really proliferated, and you had needed 6-digit telephone numbers and 7-digit eventually. And when they started telling people that we need to give you a new telephone number, almost immediately people were very upset. They really liked their telephone numbers, and they wanted to know, well, why can't I just keep my four-digit number and you can put some zeros in front of it? And we still see this today. You know, in New York City the other year, they decided that there were too many people for the 212 area code, so they came up with 646. And there were actually people who were offering extra money to keep their 212 area code. They really like that number. So we very easily take to being numbered as people.
Yeah, it is funny. There's a certain cachet to having that prefix in the area code, rather, in front of a particular number.
Sure, and the same thing happened with cell phones as well. That when they decided that they weren't all going to be 917, they'd have 347 and things like that. Initially, people were pretty upset when they found out they couldn't get a 917 cell phone.
So you once discovered one of these really old phones in the basement of your building, is that right?
Yeah, I did. I was living in a brownstone in Brooklyn, and the original telephone from the 19th century was down in the basement. And it had been slightly upgraded. There was a rotary dial that was put into it, but it was still really the same old telephone that you see in those old movies, where there's a an earpiece that's on a cord that comes off, and you have to actually talk into the little the other like trumpet that comes out of the telephone on the wall. And it was great because I plugged it in and it worked beautifully. But what was lovely about it was that when people came by to visit me, they'd always want to use this telephone, and inevitably they would do it poorly. People would they'd talk into the earpiece, or they'd bang, or they'd try to turn some crank that didn't do anything. And what's great about this is everybody likes to laugh when they see the old telephone books, because they have these full pages of instructions of how to use a telephone, and people think, oh, it's simple to use a telephone. But when you give people an old telephone, they always use it wrong. It was an enormously new form of technology when it first came on the market in the 1870s, and nobody really knew how to deal with the telephone. So one of the things that telephone books did was they explained to people how to use this new form of technology. There was some great stories in some telephone history books about, when they first had telephones in New York City, they set up a stage and people would come up on stage to try this new thing. And they were enormously uncomfortable. People would shout into the telephone, or they would just constantly say, "Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Can you hear me?" It was not the same relationship that we have with our telephones today.
And a lot of people, when Alexander Graham Bell, and we'll talk a little bit more about him in a minute, but when he went around to show off his new invention and try to sell this thing, people thought it was a hoax.
Oh, yeah. People, they scoffed at him, and people said, well, it's just obviously it can't be done. You can't talk over wires. Then aside of that, then in England, for instance, it was a lot of people would say, that, well, okay, maybe the telephone works, but nobody needs a telephone. Nobody's going to talk into a silly little box. But it was such a new form of technology, and it was so different than anything else that people had had before, that there was an immediate and kind of innate suspicion that people had, that nobody thought that you could talk over a wire. One of the things that I think is great about telephones is that a lot of the things that we think about telephones have existed for far longer than we think. There's all this debate about whether Bell did or did not, in fact, invent the telephone, and there's competing claims for Elisha Gray and Antonio Meucci, and I don't really have a strong feeling about it. But one thing that I found that was really wonderful is that Bell did invent the wireless telephone, and he did it in 1880. He created a form of kind of cellular technology, in a sense, or wireless technology, which involved using silver metal discs coated with selenium, and somehow this was able to send, you can send your voice across light waves. And he set up a demonstration of this, and people talked to each other from about 300 yards away. And so that was the first wireless technology, or wireless telephone. So, that was even more confusing to people, I think, than the actual telephone, that you could just kind of talk through the air.
So what Bell did have going for him was he was really on the spot when it came to filing his patents.
Yeah, he was very good with the patent office. And some of the other people, like I think Meucci and Gray, they filed what was called a caveat rather than a patent, which was something you used to be able to do with the United States Patent Office, which was more or less you were saying, this is a thing I'm inventing, but I'm not ready to patent it yet. Bell patented his telephone, and the suspicion that one of the reasons why he patented it when he did was because somebody at the United States Patent Office alerted him to the fact that Elisha Gray was about to patent his, so he kind of rushed his in. Like I said, I don't have any strong feelings about whether Bell did or did not steal the technology, but he's now certainly credited with being the father of the telephone, and I guess you could say, hence, the father of the telephone book.
Ammon Shea is my guest. He's a writer whose new book is called The Phone Book, The Curious History of the Book That Everyone Uses But No One Reads. We'll resume our conversation with Ammon in just a couple of minutes. You're welcome to join us by calling 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Since we're talking about phones today, I will start by giving you the phone number to make a contribution of support to KERA. That one is 1-888-694-6931, or you can go to the newfangled internet and do it at kera.org. Jeff, we do have copies of Ammon Shea's book.
We do indeed. When you join the station today at the $120 membership level, you can choose to be thanked with your very own copy of The Phone Book, The Curious History of the Book That Everyone Uses But No One Reads. When I saw that Ammon Shea had a new book out, I was so excited because he takes on these tasks like
last time he read the Oxford English Dictionary from the A's to the Z's.
Right, exactly. And he always really has a great take on the history of what it is he's doing and looking into. And he's just a lot of fun to have on the show. And I know that we hear from you. And I know that you like these kinds of conversations. I know that there are those of you listening today who are really excited that Ammon Shea is our guest. Maybe you heard him over the weekend on Weekend Edition one of the NPR shows. Maybe you saw the book yourself. Well, this is an opportunity for you to support the station and this program that brings you these kinds of conversations by calling 888-694-6931 or by contributing online at kera.org.
Public radio is a partnership between those of us who produce the content, those of you who listen to the content. We all come together and make it possible. We need you, of course, to be listening because otherwise there'd be no point in doing this. We'd have no ability to do this without financial support from people who listen. We are asking you, everyone who listens, that includes you, to make a contribution of support this year and preferably during this drive if you haven't done so already. The telephone number is 1-888-694-6931, or you can go online to kera.org.
My wife picked up one of those sort of stampers that the tape goes through and you stamp out
letters. The Dymo letter?
Exactly. Right. This one's actually made of chrome, and it seems really ancient. It's this incredible object, and it's got on it, it's got the address and phone number for where you can order more tape for it, and it's like 215 Waverly 4 7862.
Sure.
You know, it's like some Philadelphia phone number back when, you know, you still had
Butterfield 9.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. It's pretty cool. I mean, there's so much social history in this kind of topic, and I think that if you're into this kind of communication history and just history of sort of the American way, it's all in the phone book, and we can thank you with your very own copy of Ammon Shea's book, The Phone Book, when you call 888-694-6931 or contribute online at kera.org. Chris, just $179,000 left to raise in the drive. Sounds like a lot, but especially if you just tuned in, but we started at $700,000, and this is going to go quickly if you'll be the next one to contribute.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. We also love it, love it, love it when you go online to make your contribution. It's a little bit less expensive in terms of processing the membership when you do this online, but the membership is exactly the same. You can choose the same thank you gifts. In fact, you can scroll through any number of things that we might not have talked about for a while but are probably still available to thank you for your membership contribution. Again, go online to kera.org or call 1-888-694-6931. If you are interested in a copy of Ammon Shea's new book, The Phone Book, the Curious History of the Book That Everyone Reads, but Everyone Uses But No One Reads, you can get that when you make a contribution at or above the $120 level today. Thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Continuing and Professional Education, announcing a 9-month intensive CFP certificate program starting in January in Plano. You can learn more at smu.edu/PlanoCFP.
You're You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is writer Ammon Shea. We're talking about The Phone Book, the curious history of the book that everyone uses but no one reads. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372 or by sending email to think@kera.org. Among the instructions that existed in those early phone books, Ammon, were exactly what to say when you're on the phone. Why is it that pretty much everyone in the English-speaking world says hello?
Well, that's one of the great things I think the telephone and the telephone book have given us is, as I mentioned before, people would frequently become very uncomfortable when they first started talking on the telephone. And among other things, they just didn't know how to start the conversation. A lot of times there were all these things people would say like, do I have you? And are you there? Are you there? And so one of the earliest telephone books, and the first one came out in New Haven in 1878, and then the second edition, you could say, of that book, which came out later that year, has these instructions in the beginning of how to start and stop your conversation. And they say that you should start the conversation by saying hello. And up to this point, you know, hello had existed in the English language for hundreds of years, but it wasn't used as a method of greeting. People would say things like, hello, what have we here? It was more of an exclamatory remark. And so suddenly the telephone book started saying, well, you should start your conversations by saying hello, which, by the way, Alexander Graham Bell was very much against. He thought we should all start our conversations by saying ahoy.
Can you imagine that?
Yeah, I'm really kind of glad that one didn't take. we're much better off with hello. Unfortunately, their method of ending the conversation that they recommended has largely fallen by the wayside. And at the time, the telephone books instructed people when they finished talking to say, that is all. And that has not stuck with us. Somehow we picked up goodbye instead of that. That is all had a little bit of history in that, you know, police would use it over the airwaves. There's this great old Daffy Duck cartoon, I think, with a gorilla, and the phrase, that is all, Breckenridge, comes over the police airwaves throughout the cartoon. But somebody pointed out, I think Montgomery Burns, actually, in The Simpsons, still says ahoy when he picks up the telephone. Beside of his cartoon characters, these words have largely faded from our public consciousness.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go to Philip in Dallas. Hey, Philip.
Hey there. Growing up in London, we did a similar kind of thing. That the letter we had started off where you would, this was before my time, but I was told you would pick up the receiver and you would ask the operator, for example, for Bayswater 1803, and she would connect you. Once they went to where you could direct dial, as they called it, they just replaced the name of the town with the numbers that match, so Bayswater became 229-1803, BAY being 229. And the whole of London was mapped out like that.
Yeah, well, one of the things that's great about that is, well, and we obviously had it was before they had all digits here, they had numeric prefixes as well, and they didn't necessarily map to the neighborhood. In some cases, they did. The neighborhood where I grew up had Rhinelander, there was Gramercy, GR was a telephone number. The great old Glenn Miller song, Pennsylvania 65,000, had to do with Penn Station. But a lot of them just were kind of words that they came up with. But in 1961, when the telephone company announced that they were switching over to all digits, a number of people were furious about this. And there were actually organizations that were formed. There was a group in San Francisco called the Anti-Digit Dialing League that was formed. And they were very passionate about not wanting to give up, and they thought it was kind of dehumanizing to make this all numeric. They thought, you know, there was personality that they attached to their phone numbers because of the words that they formed.
It is funny that people were so alarmed by this.
Well, you know, it is, but again, you know, when you see that, you know, like in New York City, when we changed not so long ago and not everybody could have a 212 prefix anymore, people were really upset. Suddenly, when people said they found out they were going to have a 646 telephone number, they thought it seemed déclassé. They thought, you know, I'm going to be thought of as some rube. You know, I moved to Manhattan to be in the big city. I want a 212 telephone number. People still are very, very passionate about what kind of telephone number. I can't really relate to having that kind of passion over what kind of number. It doesn't make a difference to me. But to a number of people, they do really care tremendously about this.
And the interesting thing now is, especially with cell phones, once you have a phone number, you're very likely to have it for decades because people move to different cities and they don't necessarily change their number.
Right. So maybe this will, maybe this will change now.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also get to us online at think@kera.org. Let's go to Curtis in Justin. Hi, Curtis.
Hi. My mom's had the same phone number since 1966, and I was wondering in your research for the book of if you found an old phone number in the U.S. and what year it was issued, and if it's still been issued to the same person.
Sort of continuously in use.
Well, yeah. I don't know about recent, but there was a guy named Dr. E.L. Thompson was one of the first people. He was one of the first telephone subscribers, period, in 1878. And he, at least at the time that he died, had the longest continuous telephone number. He died in like the 1930s or early 40s. I'm sure that there's somebody who's had a longer one since then, but I never found what the longest continually held telephone number was since the beginning of the telephone.
And this guy was so proud of his number that he tacked it up next to his deathbed?
Yeah, he had the copy of the original telephone list tacked next to his bed. And I think it was a copy he had. There's only one actual copy left of that telephone book, or that telephone sheet, the first one that came out in New Haven. If you ever find another one, grab it, because old telephone books, they can be extremely lucrative. There was a later copy of that telephone book. It came out in later that year in November 1978. Somebody just auctioned off one at Christie's Auction House about a year and a half ago, and it sold for just over $170,000. So if you ever find a telephone book from the 1870s, grab it.
So we know there are people who collect these things. Do libraries keep copies around for research purposes?
Very infrequently. For the most part, telephone books have all gone on to microfilm. Hmm. And you know, one of the reasons is that they, more so than any other book, telephone books were designed to be to not last. Telephone companies didn't want people to hold on to the old books. When they dropped off new telephone books, they would pay people, you know, Boy Scouts or itinerant laborers or whatever. They'd pay people to deliver the books. And at least, you know, at first they would give them 5 cents for every book they dropped off, but they would also then give them 2 or 3 cents for every book that they took back because they actually wanted to destroy the old books. So even though there have been billions and billions of telephone books printed over the last 130 years, there are very few of the old ones remaining because the telephone company would try to get rid of them. And so this happened with libraries as well as with individuals. And they also just take up too much room. For the most part, libraries don't want to hold on to these old books. There are a couple of exceptions, and one of my favorite ones is the University of Miami has a copy of the last telephone book that was printed in Cuba before the revolution in 1959. And I just love the fact that somebody fleeing from the revolution in Cuba thought, you know, wait a minute, we'll leave the China. I've got to bring my telephone book with me when we go to Florida. But it is wonderful that somebody brought it because now it's just an enormously important part of their pre-revolutionary collection at the university because it has all this information that nobody would ever think to remember. It's one of the things that's really great about old telephone books is that they're so unemotional. They're really all that they want to do is be a complete record of this one specific thing. And because they're so complete, they manage to find all these things that people would never think to pay attention to, but which are still nonetheless very, very important. And so this, whatever it is, 1958 or 1959 Cuban telephone book is one of the most requested and I think most important, items in this archive.
I thought one of the most interesting examples that you listed here was of some phone books that were made in San Francisco that had to be entirely hand-lettered.
Right. It was in the late 19th through the early 20th century. In San Francisco, Chinatown had its own telephone exchange, and there was a Chinese subsection of the San Francisco telephone system. And so for several decades, they printed their own Chinese telephone book, and it was all done in Chinese lettering. And basically, what they would do is they hired this guy named Sam Wong, and he would draw the entire telephone book. And it wasn't a very big one; it was about 2.5 or 3,000 names, but still, that's a lot of names. And he would draw the whole thing by hand in traditional Chinese lettering using traditional Chinese methods. He would get cuttlefish ink that was taken from the Monterey Bay in the Pacific Ocean, and he would use the traditional Chinese brush, it's called a put, and a sponge, and he would do this whole thing by hand, lettering out all these names and telephone numbers in Chinese, and then they would take it from there and then have it printed up. Actually, he didn't even have the numbers, because one of the things that the people who worked in the Chinatown Exchange had to do was that part of their job was they would memorize all the telephone numbers, which is actually one heck of a feat of memory when you think, well, you memorize 3,000 telephone numbers. And so when the people went to work in the Chinatown Exchange, one of the first things they did is they spent several weeks sitting around memorizing telephone numbers. And I've never seen a copy of this book. I don't know if any of them have survived, but it is this little lovely bit of history that there was a Chinese yellow page, telephone book in the middle of America.
Ammon, is there some poor soul who earns his or her living proofreading the telephone book?
Oh, sure. The telephone companies have proofreaders. They've always had proofreaders, and for all things considered, they're really pretty accurate. There are very, very few mistakes. But anything that you can think about with the telephone book, it's been studied. I mean, back in 1916, Clark University of Massachusetts had teams of researchers working on how to make the telephone book more efficient. And, they had people come in reading telephone numbers, and they'd say, look up Harry Johnson's telephone number. And, they did this for weeks and weeks and finally figured out how to get the average length of time from like 10.5 seconds to 9.5 seconds to look up a telephone number. So anything having to do with the telephone book shape or the way that it's laid out, the accuracy, there are definitely people working on it. And there have always been telephone book proofreaders, which must take a real certain kind of person.
We'll leave that description right there and take a quick break. Ammon Shea is with us. His new book is called The Phone Book, The Curious History of the Book That Everyone Uses But No One Reads. We'll be back to the conversation in a moment. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372. Right now, though, we would ask that you pause for just a minute or a couple of minutes to go online to KERA.org, make a contribution of financial support, or you can do it on the phone at 1-888-694-6931. Join David Steinborn in Dallas, Casey Moffitt in Hazlitt, Colleen Freeman in Dallas, and Sarah Sullivan, in Fort Worth. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. Hello to you. Thanks so much for being with us today. It's just a great conversation with Ammon Shea today, author of The Phone Book. You can support the station that's bringing it to you by calling 888-694-6931 or by contributing online at KERA.org. Chris, we're under $180,000 left to raise. I know I keep saying that, but it's exciting because so many of you, it's human nature to wait until the opportunity to sort of ride in on the white horse. Well, it's time to start the ride by calling 888-694-6931. Or by going online to KERA.org. Believe me, we want this drive to end in a positive and successful way as quickly and as badly as you want it to. And your call right now will make it happen.
1-888-694-6931 or online at KERA.org. You love public radio, and it takes a special person really to get public radio and to be fascinated by it. It's funny because Jeff and I instantly jumped on this book. One, because we've had Ammon on the show before, we know he's a great guest, but because he makes things interesting. You might think to yourself, a book about the phone book. No thanks, I already know what the phone book is. And yet, of course, it's fascinating. It's filled with these great stories that reveal not only the history of the thing itself, but a little bit about who we are and what we value and how we've changed. That's sort of, it's such a public radio approach to a topic like this, to try to understand it in depth and answer the questions that no one's thought to even ask before.
Yeah, it's like when you took rhetoric in college and the teacher was lecturing on rhetoric. This is a lot more fun.
It is a lot more fun.
This is a lot more interesting than that might have been. But of course, apologies to any. I mean, I'm sure your rhetoric
professors of rhetoric.
Yes, I'm sure your rhetoric classes are fantastic. And actually, we'd love to hear from you at 888-694-6931. And, you know, we say we listen to you and we take – I got an email or a phone message, I can't remember, this morning from someone suggesting a topic for the show, and I immediately went online and looked at it. And that's what we do. You know, we're it's not a monolithic thing here. We want to hear from you. We want you.
We want to please you.
Yeah, absolutely. We want you to let us know what you think of the show, and we want you to let us know who you'd like to hear, because we have to come back to you a couple of times a year and ask you to give money to the station. And so it's really important to us that we're providing a service that you can identify with, that you can appreciate, and that you will come to rely on. And we want you to feel like you're part of the conversation. But to be a fully invested part of the station, to be able to say, I'm KERA, you have to call 888-694-6931 and make a contribution of some at some financial level. To be able to say, I'm a part of KERA, really, you got to go online to kera.org and make a contribution, because that is what makes you a fully fledged participant in this radio station.
We know that all of you listening rely on the station. We know that most of you love it. It might even be something you like to boast about, that KERA is your favorite radio station. It might feel like part of your identity. If it feels like part of your identity to be a public radio listener, it really ought to feel like part of your identity to be a public radio supporter. You can decide the amount of money. You know, we throw out these suggested levels. Any amount works. You know, if you can afford $1,500 as a Friends level member or something more modest, that decision is up to you. We do ask for your participation as a financial supporter at 1-888-694-6931 or online at kera.org. You can join Yvonne Garcia in Garland and Gordon and Mary Moore Hosford in Dallas.
888-694-6931. That's the number. 1-888 toll free. 1-888-694-6931. Or go online to kera.org. Make a safe and secure e-contribution there. And you can check out all the different thank you gifts. We've had a slew of fascinating topics on the Think Show in the last couple of weeks. And if we talked about an author's book or something on the show during the drive, I guarantee you it's still available. You can go online and look at that at kera.org.
I'm laughing because you said toll-free. I think this is definitely something that people our age and older can remember. That was a big deal.
That's right. We'll pick up the tab when you make that call.
Right. It doesn't cost you a dime, except for your contribution.
Right, right.
But we'll take a dime.
We'll take a dime.
1-888-694-6931 is the number, or you can go online to kera.org. If you want your thank you gift to be a copy of Ammon Shea's new book, The Phone Book, we'd be happy to send that along to you. It's available today when you make a contribution at or above the $120 level. Back in a minute with Ammon Shea.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Continuing and Professional Education, announcing a 9-month intensive CFP certificate program starting in January in Plano. You can learn more at smu.edu/PlanoCFP.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is writer Ammon Shea, whose new book is The Phone Book, the curious history of the book that everyone uses but no one reads. We have an email here to think@kera.org from Ed in Dallas, reminding us he's been a KERA member since 91. Ed writes, let's not forget a phone directory-related rite of passage for new hires in public accounting. Newly coined managers anxious to sharpen the skills of their juniors would instill 10-key skills by having them race to add the columns of phone numbers in the white pages. Have you heard that?
I didn't know about that one. That's great.
It's good to know. I want to ask you this. You write about the fact that the phone book in Dallas was thought to be very special for a long time.
Oh, yeah, that's great. That's a wonderful book. And I'm sure that a number of your listeners will remember this phone book. It was in Dallas and Houston, and it was Southwestern Bell Telephone Company back then. For about two decades, from the mid-50s to the mid-70s, they commissioned a Texan artist named Carl Hofle, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, to be honest with you, to draw the cover. And he was this wonderful artist. He did these kind of absurd scenes of the city. And they're incredibly meticulous, hand-drawn illustrations of either Dallas or Houston or some part of the city. And it would take about 6 or 8 months to do them. And they would go on the cover of the Yellow Pages for that year. And there are these remarkably detailed sketches that have all these kind of madcap bits of absurdity in them, like you know, the oil truck, which is 1/8 inch long, will have orange juice written on the side. You know, the clock is 15 hours on the dial instead of 12. Little tiny things, and people would really look forward to these books that they got every year, and then they would a lot of times sit around and kind of try to find all the things that were wrong in the picture. But they're beautiful, beautiful covers, and most telephone books really had kind of boring covers for most of the 20th century. So you're fairly lucky there in Dallas and Houston that you had this guy doing your covers.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go to Catherine in Heath. Hi, Catherine.
Hello. My question for the author is, what do you know about ring-down telephone numbers? I worked at a summer camp in Maine, and the number to the camp was it's even said in the brochure, it is a ring-down number. And I've always been curious because nobody at camp could explain it to me, and I'd like to know what it is.
I'm terribly sorry, but I've never heard of that in my life.
I haven't heard of that either. I wonder if it was some
ring-down number. I don't know.
Internal line, maybe, with a central, who knows, switchboard somewhere. Let's go back to the phones now, and we'll speak with Terry in Fort Worth. Hi, Terry.
Hi. Ahoy. Are we there?
Ahoy. Hey. Do you hear me?
Yes.
Do I have you?
I'm wondering if anyone remembers this. Now, I grew up in Oklahoma, but I hope this is not a reflection solely on my native state. But I distinctly remember as a child, you could look up in the phone book, either the business or the Yellow Pages, you would look up the, and it would say, see second word in name. And then you could look up phone, F-O-N-E, and it would say phone company, see Southwestern Bell Telephone Company.
Hmm.
And I don't know if that was just a reflection on perhaps the less literate times of decades ago or what, but if you're familiar with that or if anybody remembers that.
Well, I have seen other Yellow Pages in various areas that had misspellings, and they would insert them and say, see this section. I think it wasn't terribly uncommon, but as time has gone on, they've largely done away with that.
Hey, is it true that phone books are bulletproof?
There are some great stories about people using them thusly. That was the thing that really got me interested in the subject of the telephone book in the first place. It was a story in a railroad magazine in 1935 that there was a fruit company in Central America that had been getting hijacked by bandits, and their payroll train was getting attacked by these bandits who had these armor-piercing bullets that were going through the side of the railroad cars. And that somehow, I don't know how they figured this out, but somebody suddenly discovered that if you put the New York City White Pages in the side of the thing, of the train car, it fits perfectly in the partitions there. You know, they're like 16 inches wide or something. And then suddenly the bullets, they can make it through the metal of the train, but they won't make it through the telephone book. And so the fruit company ordered 4,000 copies of the Manhattan White Pages from 1934. And had them shipped down to Central America, and everybody was happy afterwards. It's a great story. I really hope it's true, except that I've seen the very similar stories in a number of other places. Supposedly there was some gangster in Chicago who had his limousine outfitted with telephone books. I've heard stories that they're used in prison as, you know, kind of armor, body armor, if you tape it around your body. And it's that story has come up in a variety of other places. The only thing that makes me think that some of them are true is that I read some of them in the New Yorker magazine, which has this kind of legendary fact-checking department that before they print anything, they really assiduously check to make sure that it's true. So I think that there is some truth to it, but some of them I think are urban legends. But I don't think that they're still bulletproof considering some of the ballistics that are out there today, but I believe they have been used as bulletproofing before.
Let's go back to the phones now. This time we'll speak with Sarah in Lancaster. Hi, Sarah.
Hello.
Go right ahead, please.
Yes. I had a comment to make, but before I do, I want to let you know that we took every cover. First, we saved every phone book that had those careful pen and ink drawings on them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's great.
And after it got to be a few too many, we took all of them off and had them framed, and they now hang in a our dining room. I just, being an artist, I just was very impressed with them.
Oh, that's cool.
So, and the Dallas phone book has gone through such metamorphosis of being so thick and then trying to thin it down that I can see how it could have stopped the bullets days of old. But I was calling, unfortunately, I guess I could feel very old or just with it, in that when I was born, my dad had just gotten out of the military in January 1946, and they had a telephone installed, and I learned at about 2 or 3 years of age. I don't have a clue what our phone looked like, but I do know the last that it was a four-digit number, and I memorized that then. And then right before we moved, when I was six, they added a fifth digit. And then just, and then we moved in 1952, and they added a word. Ours was Drake, which then became, you know, shortened to DR. And then, of course, then we got the area codes and everything. And that number has stayed at my family home to this very day. And
wow.
It's never been changed. So, I, you know, I went to a high school reunion recently, which, needless to say, being one of the first baby boomers, is was our 45th high school reunion. And many of us were talking that we still remembered each other's phone numbers.
Well, that's so
cool. School.
Sarah, thank you so much for your call. It is interesting how people are sort of tied to this is part of our history.
Well, it's also something that's really in flux. I mean, with cell phones, and they all have built-in phone books on them, you input the numbers. You know, it's amazing. My best friends from high school, I graduated from high school 20-something years ago, I still remember the phone numbers, the childhood phone numbers of my best friends from high school, and they're my best friends today. I have no clue what their phone numbers are today.
Because you hit speed dial.
I remember the phone numbers that they had 15, 20 years ago, but I don't know what their phone numbers are right now. If I want to call them and my cell phone is out of batteries, I'm out of luck. But I could call their childhood residences with no trouble.
You know, it's funny. I wonder about phone books because I've actually asked for them not to be delivered because I can look up a number online, and we live in a small house and they take up space. Will our grandkids have phone books?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, one of the things is that Yellow Pages probably aren't going away anytime soon just because they make so much money for a number of people. Yellow Pages is somewhere around a $14 or $15 billion a year industry. It's hugely profitable. So the people who make and sell Yellow Page advertising really want to continue doing this. They're somewhat invested in it. White Pages, it's a little less certain. One of the problems, though, is that not everybody has Internet access, and so they still really want to have telephone books. There was a great case in Ohio just last year where AT&T wanted to stop sending White Pages to everybody, and the Public Utilities Commission said, well, that's fine. You don't have to, but before you do this, you need to take out an advertisement in a local newspaper saying that you will only send a telephone book to the people who ask for them. And so they took out an ad in the Cleveland Plain Dealer, and they didn't think anything much was going to happen, but so many people called up looking for telephone books are worried that they weren't going to get one that they actually crashed the AT&T call center. And so everybody likes to say, well, I never use it or I never want it. And for many people, that's true, but there's still a sizable portion of the population for whom it's important to have a telephone book. So I think we'll have fewer telephone books as time goes on, especially the White Pages, but I don't really see it disappearing completely anytime soon.
So for now, spared the fate of the only in soft copy OED.
Right.
Ammon, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for spending the hour with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
The new book by writer Ammon Shea is called The Phone Book, The Curious History of the Book That Everyone Uses But No One Reads. If you would like to have a copy of Ammon's new book, as well as supporting KERA, you can make a contribution today at the $120 level or above, and we'd be happy to send it to you. It really is a lot of fun to read. You can get to that by going online to kera.org or by calling 1-888-694-6931. Join Patrick Beckham in Arlington, Ivan Sudborough in Rockwall, and Barbara Brown in Denton. Hi, Jeff Whittington.
Hey, Chris Boyd. And in the spirit of that show on Friday at noon that I sit in here and
that little show manage, that everybody adores.
The Anything You Ever Wanted to Know program. This is from Kim, who listens on the sly at work today. She looked up in telephony, ring down is a method of signaling an operator in which telephone ringing current is sent over the line to operate a lamp or cause the operation of a self-locking relay known as a drop. Ring down is used in manual operation, as distinguished from dialing, and uses a continuous or pulsed AC signal transmitted over the line and may be used with or without a switchboard. Apparently, it originated in magneto telephone signaling, where they cranked the magneto in a telephone, the old, you know, like you see in the Westerns. It would not only ring its bell, but also cause a drop to fall down at the central office switchboard, marked with the number of the line to which the magneto telephone instrument was connected. And apparently the last ring down telephone exchange in the U.S. was located at Bryant Pond, Maine, had 400-plus subscribers, and converted to dial service in October 1983.
Wow, so maybe that caller's camp experience tracks with that timetable?
Maybe
wow.
So. Hey, you
thank
never
you.
Know.
That's a lovely. Yes. Thank you very much to who wrote in, Kim?
That was Kim.
Thank you, yeah. Kim.
Thank you very much, Kim. We really appreciate that. And, of course, perhaps Wikipedia or wherever this came from as well. But right now we're waiting to hear from you. Please ring down 888-694.
Craig the Magneto.
6931. We can do it. We'll do it with you. Let's we're doing the movie projector. Chris isn't doing it. I'm doing it. 888-694-6931 or go online to kera.org.
It just takes a couple of minutes to make your contribution of support, but you get a year of great radio. Maybe honestly you get the last 10 years where you haven't made a contribution. You really do feel more a part of KERA. We really think of this as a community service, but we think of it more than that as a community partnership, because the reason that we're able to provide this radio service to you is because people like you decide that public radio is a must-have for any vibrant community. You make a contribution at whatever level your budget affords and your conscience decides. A few dollars is great. A few thousand dollars is great. We're not telling you what you can afford, but we are asking everyone who listens to the station to join us in this partnership to keep public radio strong in North Texas. 1-888-694-6931 or online at kera.org.
Recent studies have shown, from what I'm told by a very trusted source, Chris, that public radio and the kind of human, intelligent, non-confrontational dialogue that it inspires is as important to a community as are good schools, good roads, clean and healthy water, clean air, and
clean ideas.
Clean ideas. And you can say, I am KERA. When you call 888-694-6931, you can say, I'm KERA. When you go online to kera.org, make a contribution, you are indeed part of the winning formula that makes the world a little bit better place right here in North Texas, because you have access to this service.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. You can also do this online at kera.org. If you are already a member and you're up to date on your membership, of course, you're welcome to give an additional gift if you feel so inclined. But we would ask you also to think about evangelizing for us. Let your friends and neighbors and relatives know that you've done this. Maybe they never thought they knew anybody who supported public radio, and they thought nobody they knew would do it. Maybe finding out that you're a supporter will inspire them to do the same thing. So consider that if you would. 1-888-694-6931 is the number. It's like those I voted stickers or the ones that say I gave blood. You know, we need I am KERA stickers.
Yeah, well, I mean, we can send out like a little bandage that you wrap around your wallet or something.
It would not even be a bandage. It would just be a rinse it under cool water.
it swells up really big and fills the back window of your car. We were talking about this the other day, actually. Chris and I were talking about this, that, you know, when we offer, for example, the phone book by Ammon Shea at the $120 membership level today, which you can get at 888-694-6931, and someone would say, well, gosh, is it worth it? Is that book worth it? Well, it's not the book, really, that you're paying the $120 for at all, really. I mean, we're getting that. We're acquiring that. We're essentially buying it and sending it to you to thank you for supporting the station. It's the station you get all year long. And when you make that contribution, when you make that gift, either on the phone or online at kera.org, you're helping to create a reality that you live in. And that's why it works. That's why it makes sense. Even though you could probably never launch a public radio style business model today, it's worked for 40 years because because it works, because it makes sense. And so we're just asking you to take that next logical step and become part of the winning team at KERA by calling 888-694-6931.
And the truth is, to continue working, we need to continue finding new people to step up and support the station. You know, maybe five people who supported KERA last year have moved to another market and they're supporting their public radio station there. Or maybe, you know, they've lost a job and they're not able to contribute. We constantly need to bring new people on. So please don't assume that when we talk about that percentage of people that support KERA, that that's fixed and they're going to come through all the time. We really need to expand the number of people. We're not kidding when we say we would like everyone who listens to make a contribution. You know, maybe for you, it's a friends level membership. Maybe you want to do a day sponsorship where you give $365 a year. Maybe you want to try out being a KERA member by you know, throwing $10 or $20 or $50 our way. Whatever you want to do, we do want to hear from you at 1-888-694-6931. Or online at KERA.org. Thanks to Marilyn Wiley in Flower Mound and Tina Stovall and Hagen Bales in Fort Worth. Thanks also to you for your support at KERA.org.
The Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.